Welcome back to the Renaissance Times podcast, yeah. Ray Bear.
Super happy to be here. I'm good. Good. Mostly. How about you? It's my Jimmy Carr impression. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Angry. Angry-ish. As angry as I get. You know me. I'm not the angry type.
Yeah.
No. I'm a lover, not a fighter. But we're going to do a bullshit filter episode after this so we can get it out.
Yeah, this is Leo, where we admire the man, we turn it off, we turn on the bullshit filter, and we just fucking lose it. So you got to hang on for that.
Well, let's get back to Leonardo. Da Vinci part 47, 5, 9. We don't know. It's been a long time. We've been talking about Leo for over a year.
Yeah.
And look, he's probably the greatest human being that's ever existed. So I think he deserves a good stretch. He deserves at least as long as we did Yalta. That's what I figure.
That's fair. That's at fair. Least. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, yeah.
Ray, I got a question for you to start this off. Do you like watching deaf people, Ray?
It depends on what they're doing. No, I don't have a strong opinion on deaf people. Do you like to watch
deaf porn? You ever watch deaf porn?
I kept turning the volume up, and I got frustrated, and I just quit. I turned it off.
Well, it's not that you're deaf; it's that they're.
Oh,
anyway,
God,
yeah,
I destroyed an entire library. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's where the when the guy's saying I'm coming," but he's doing it with sign language, so it's.
I must know sign language because I do. There's a look. Well, you've seen the look with my face that I make. No, I guess I do know a type of sign language. It's facial sign language. Yeah.
Well, you know who did like watching deaf people? Leonardo da Vinci, Ray. I can't attest to the idea that he watched deaf porn.
Right.
But probably. He liked watching deaf people. He once wrote in one of his notebooks, "Let your figures have actions appropriate to what they are intended to think or say, and these will be well learned by imitating the deaf, who by the motion of their hands, eyes, eyebrows, and the whole body endeavor to express the sentiments of their mind." Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, the characters in your painting can't talk to the audience, so if you can figure out how to use their expressions to convey what they're thinking, he has more depth in the painting. The painting communicates better.
Well, as you said before, it's not just a picture, a snap, and an image of time. It's a narrative. And so he's trying to convey a lot. And then, you know, there's going to be a lot of movements. There's going to be a lot of gestures. And now, because of what he's seeing here, he really does feel that it's right between facial gestures, body movement, and hand gestures. He can convey so much more than just, oh, my God, that's Mary. That's great. No, what is Mary doing? You know, what is baby Jesus doing? So it's him.
What are they thinking? What are they feeling?
What are they thinking? Exactly. Exactly.
What's the experience that they're having right now?
And because of that, his painting can go to a whole nother level, and he's going to take a lot of people with him, obviously. But no, this guy, he doesn't miss a trick. First it's the little dragonflies, whatever they are, and now it's watching deaf people to learn how to communicate without using words.
He had experience with deaf people early on in his Milan years. He shared a studio with the Predis brothers. De Predis, probably Italian or French, De Predis.
Mm-hmm.
They were fellow artists in Milan, and one of them was deaf.
Right.
So Leo watched him all the time.
Bit of that.
Visual joke. You had to be there, folks.
Sorry, I keep forgetting.
Now, while he was sharing a studio with the De Predis brothers, they got a commission.
Oh, good.
To paint the Immaculate Conception. Now, what's the Immaculate Conception, Ray? You're ex-Catholic.
The Immaculate Conception is, and I don't really like to talk about this too much, but it was my first threesome. Pretty immaculate, pretty amazing. I mean, it was... They were paid, but that's not the point. The point is there was three of us in the room. No, Immaculate Conception, is that, I don't know, is that where God is, speaking of a threesome, is that where God is non-physically slipping it into Mary? Or I don't know the proper words to use.
Yeah, look, I always need to look this up because it's tricky.
Good.
It's the Immaculate Conception is a doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church,
right,
which states that the Virgin Mary was free from original sin from the moment of her conception. So it's not about,
right,
it's nothing to do with Jesus's conception, which was definitely not immaculate. It was quite,
it was messy.
It was quite immaculate. Yeah. It was immaculate.
Yeah. I mean, he had it tied up in ropes at one point. You don't want to know. You don't want to know. Sorry.
God maculated all over Mary, speaking of deaf porn or silent porn, because they didn't have talkies back
then.
No, it's all silent porn, just God maculating all over Mary.
Right.
It's about Mary's conception, because this idea, I think, was that if Mary had, you know, the burden of original sin that we got from Adam,
right,
because he ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and God wanted him to be dumb as fuck because he liked his men dumb. God, he liked them, good looking but dumb,
right?
Like you like your women.
I think this is
not Heather, right, before Heather, obviously.
Right? Yeah, I think this is a quote directly from God. I'm trying to remember the wording exactly, but something like, "I love the poorly educated," or was that Trump?
Yeah,
something. I don't know. Somebody. But let me ask you this, and I'm not even going to pretend to know a lot about this stuff because it's all horse shit anyway. Aren't we responsible or guilty of something bad that happens just because we're born? Is that because we've been physically born and we're connected to Adam and Eve, and so we share? And I barely know what I'm talking about here, but Mary was born too physically, right? So how is she any better than any of us?
She was free of original sin from the moment of her conception.
How did that – just God decided to – I'm saving you for something special.
Yeah. So God, I assume, just decided
it was a Tuesday
that she was special.
Right.
And he could just remove original sin, which begs the question
– take mine!
If he could do that for Mary,
right,
why couldn't he do it for everyone? And if he could do it for everyone,
right,
why did Jesus have to die for our sins? If God could just do it, and if he could just do it but chose not to do it,
Dick,
is it because he just wanted to see Jesus killed? Is he a bit of a torture porn, or is he just a cunt? This is the question that we have to ask.
All the above. One, he's not saving me because I'm not a 13-year-old girl. He does want to see Jesus hang because, let's face it, it's pretty stimulating if you have the right mindset. No, but you have, within those 20 seconds, you've completely unraveled Christianity, and I get why people don't like you. I do.
I got a critical email. I got an email from a guy the other day. Oh, man, it's been my week for crazy. I got an email from a guy.
Right.
Criticizing the film, although he says he's an atheist, but he was criticizing the film. And one of the criticisms that he had was my sneakers, the whiter than white sneakers that I was wearing, as he said. Now, they were brand new Adidas Superstars. I'll confess to that. They were very white because they were brand new. But he criticized, that was one of the criticisms he pulled out of the film.
Right.
The whiter than white sneakers. And in my reply to him, I said, I'm just going to ignore you said that to so you can save face. Let's just pretend that
never happened.
Let's pretend you're more intelligent than that, and we'll just move on, shall we?
Maybe God blessed them, and that's why they're so white. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mary was completely pure at one point.
They're immaculate superstars.
I would have called them cocaine white, but that's me. Don't worry about that.
Now, the Immaculate Conception idea was pushed by the Franciscans.
Right.
Who, as you will recall, were also in charge of the Inquisition along with the Dominicans. Was this idea that on one hand we want to torture Jews, or what do we call them? Crypto-Jews.
Exactly.
Fake Jews.
Yes.
You know, the fake Christians, real Jews, fake Christians.
Right.
Crypto-Jews. That was like 2 years ago we did those episodes on the Inquisition.
But those people are still dead. Yes. Sorry.
And they were also pushing the Immaculate Conception.
Right.
Now, so anyway, the Depardieu brothers and Leonardo were given a commission by the Confraternity of the Immaculate Conception, which was a worship group of rich laymen.
Yeah.
They wanted them to paint the altarpieces for the Franciscan church that they were using for their little worshiping parties.
Right.
And Leonardo was given the job of painting large parts of it.
Oh, okay.
Now, I like this. He was given they had very explicit ideas
as
for what was to be in the painting.
As rich people often do.
And how it was to be painted. Mm. This wasn't, look, you know, we'll leave it up to you.
I trust
Leonardo
you.
Fucking Vinci.
You're the artist. Yeah. I'm just a rich guy.
You're the artist. Yeah. Just give me something good.
Yeah.
They had very micromanaging, very specific instructions.
Right.
How did Leonardo handle that, Ray?
Well, they gave him a list of what he wanted to do, and he said, okay, counteroffer. And he will just paint whatever the hell he wants. I'm Leonardo da Vinci. I use my imagination. I've been at this for quite some time. I'm probably the smartest person on the planet. How about we go with what I think is best, and you just sit down and fuck off and write checks. Thank you very much, sir. But he's Leo. He's always gone with that instinct. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
You don't tell me what to paint, and I won't tell you how to be a rich cunt. Okay? So that's just...
You go with your strength,
delineate
the cuntiness, and speaking Cantonese, and I'll go with my strength, which is, you know, fucking painting, dick. So anyway, I'm done. I'm sorry. He's speaking Cantonese. So I couldn't understand. Could you quit speaking Cantonese, please? Thank you. Just
he's speaking Cantonese.
Could you picture giving? You would have to be a rich asshole to think you can give Leonardo detailed instructions. Sir, I'm even lucky to get you here today. Here's a whole bunch of money. Go. Just go. But no, they're rich. Now, remember we talked, this was probably 2 years ago, we talked about that transition in the Renaissance where the artists went just from being workers to semi being celebrities to, you know, whatever. They're the guys on top. Well, you're still seeing it here where he's fucking Leonardo da Vinci. And they're like, yeah, boy, come here. I want you to paint this. And this is exactly what I want. Don't deviate. Don't fuck it up. Now off you go. And so they're treating him like a worker, even though he's clearly a god among men.
He's speaking Cantonese.
Okay.
So the instructions that he got was that it was to feature the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Her skirt shall be of gold brocade over crimson. Ooh. In oil.
Oh, yeah.
Varnished with fine liquor. No, lacquer, but he was like, liquor, lacquer, same thing. And baby Jesus, who is to be surrounded by angels, done in oil to complete perfection with the two prophets.
Oh, me.
Leo said, I hear you. But how about this?
How about I
no
don't?
No prophets.
Right.
One angel and a very young baby, John the Baptist.
It's like renegotiating his contract. Did they really write in their instructions to Leonardo the term complete perfection? Yeah, bitch, that's why you came to me. That's what I do. I mean, the idea that they had, and it's like me saying, and I want you to paint it really, really well. All right? Good job. Yeah. Thanks, Leo. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You and the horse you rode in on. I mean, you know. But
yeah. It's like you coming to me and saying, I want to do a podcast and I want you to be brilliant and hilarious. I'm like, this is what I do. You know, come on.
All right. And see, the other part was like, you don't understand. I need you to be so fucking brilliant because I'm going to do the exact opposite of that act. And it's actually going to pull you down, but I need you to be so fucking brilliant that it lifts me up. I need you to be the wings on my feet.
Do you mean the wind beneath your wings? Is that where you were going with that?
I don't know. Wind, wings.
Hey, don't come to me and tell me to wear whiter than white sneakers in something. You know, this is what I bring.
That's right.
I'm going to be wearing whiter than white sneakers.
Yeah, cocaine sneakers. That's my go-to movie shoes. Come on. Anyway.
Now, the scene that Leonardo chose came from the Apocrypha.
Right.
What's the Apocrypha, Ray?
Is that a bunch of stories that are not in the Bible, but I guess they have they've gotten traction over the years with the church. That's a guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's supposed to be like books that were supposed to have been written between like 200 BCE and 400 CE, Old Testament through the New Testament.
But they didn't make the cut.
It didn't make the cut. Yeah. Right. Like, so the people that were putting together the cut, you know, said, well, as I say in the film, my whiter than white sneakers film, like, okay, so they went, well, these stories are obviously ridiculous, but the stories about Jesus, you know, using spit to heal the blind and bringing back people from the dead and walking on water and sending demons into a herd of pigs. Well, those stories are fine. No credibility problem with those stories.
No, put those on top. I mean, I want to read about those. Yeah.
But these other stories, they're silly.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, and people often say, people often say to me, well, no, it's not that. It's those stories were too late. They were late. I go, oh, really? They were too late. What's the cutoff date then? You know, who came up with the cutoff date? What's the cutoff date for what's an acceptable amount of time has passed before you write stories?
Right.
And an unacceptable amount of time has passed before you write stories. What's the, like, what's, is it like, did they just come up with 100 years?
Give me a number.
150, 80?
Yeah.
Who came up with the number? Did they come up with the number?
That's right. And is there a an appeal review that I process that I can do? No, here's my answer to that. We have numerous amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Now, as you all know, that is the greatest document ever written in the history of everything. In fact, I think God was guiding the founding fathers' hands as they wrote the Constitution. So if we can have numerous amendments to that, surely we can upgrade or change or alter or improve the Bible. But no, because no? Okay, that's fine. All right, thanks. So but these stories stuck around.
Oh, you can. That's what the Book of Mormon is. Joseph Smith went, this is the updated version of the
image. Fuck Joe with his Mormon. Anyway.
Lots of women did.
Yeah, well, they did against their will because they were under the age of 16.
So this story from the Apocrypha that Leonardo chose is of Jesus and Mary meeting baby John. They're on the road to Egypt after they fled Bethlehem after King Herod ordered the massacre of the innocents. Of course, none of this ever happened, including the massacre of the innocents, as far as historians are concerned.
Right.
And Leonardo ended up producing two versions of this painting.
He liked it that much?
Well, not exactly, yes. They're known as the Virgin of the Rocks or Madonna of the Rocks paintings, not to be confused with Madonna Get Your Rocks Off, which was the working title of pop star Madonna's 1992 sex photography book, which I do have.
Right. Good
for you. And it's well worth a read.
Right.
We should do an episode on Madonna's sex book.
And if anybody says anything, we'll just say, oh, well, we thought it was the Mother of God's book. We didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
Throw them off the truck.
Anyway. Now, I know you like A Virgin on the Rocks, Ray.
That's my favorite drink.
It's like how you spend your Friday nights. Would you like some Coke with your virgin, sir? No, thanks. I'll just take her or him on the rocks.
I'll do a little Coke first, but none for them.
Rocks, I mean.
Right.
My rocks, yeah.
These nuts.
Get my rocks off.
Gotcha.
Now, the first version that Leo did was probably done in the 1480s. It's now where, Ray?
The Louvre. A Louvre, however you say that. Louvre. Yeah, I feel like I'm not quite finished saying the word. Louvre. No, so it somehow ended up in Paris at their library. So, yeah, cool.
Now, it somehow got caught up in some kind of dispute, a pricing dispute with the people who commissioned it and Leonardo and his partners.
Right.
By the time the first version of the painting was finished, around about 1485, Leonardo and the De Predi brothers had received payments of around about 800 lira. And they weren't happy with that. They said we'd spent more than that on materials, especially the gold gilding.
Right. Coke. Sorry. Yeah.
Now, they said, look, you got to pay more the confraternity, being a bunch of rich cunts, said, we're not paying more. What are you going to do?
Right.
And so they said, we'll show you what we're going to do, and they sold it to somebody else.
Yeah. You got to make the rich men happy. They are the one paying the bills. They are ones doing the commissions. And Leo did not make them happy by going on his own independent streak, if you will.
Well, yeah, I don't know. That may have had something to do with it. They may have looked at it and go, well, we're not paying for that. That's not what we asked for. And he said, fine, I'll sell it to somebody else. So he sold it. People don't seem to know, but it's either the French king, Louis the 12th at the time.
Right.
Or to Ludovico Sforza as a wedding gift for his niece, Bianca, and the future Holy Roman Emperor, Mad Max the First. And eventually then made its way into the Louvre.
Right.
Who turned the Louvre, which was a castle, into an art gallery, right, and slash museum?
I don't know. I'm going to totally have no idea. I'm going to guess the Sun King, but I have no idea because he's the only French king I know. It was a Louis. Was it a Louis? It was a Louis.
No, it was a Napoleon.
Oh, I should have known that. I'm sorry. I let you down again.
I think they had started to put art in there after the revolution, but it was Napoleon that turned it into the Louvre, as we know today.
Good for him.
So then 25 years later, Leonardo has to do another version to satisfy
right.
the confraternity.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Now, we know that he only left us with 20 paintings.
Right.
We thought it was 21, but now the Jesus giving you the finger painting, the Salvatore Mundi, has been dismissed
right.
by some scholars.
Right.
Not a Leonardo, they say now. Mm. You know, did we say this last time? But you wouldn't want to be the guy that sold it to the MBS for $400 million if he, you know.
Yeah.
People come knocking at your door with an axe. If you get invited to a Saudi embassy, don't go.
Right.
Don't attend it.
Or if they say, hey, I've got you a brand new tub, why don't you lay in it and check it out and try it out? I'm just going to whip out my chainsaws. Yeah. What's all this plastic? Don't worry about it. It's a long story. I'll tell you later. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
What's Dexter doing in the corner?
He's just
nothing.
Sharpening his knife. Don't worry about it. Different subject. Yeah.
So he only left us with 20 paintings, two of them.
Right.
The same fucking painting.
Right, but quality over quantity, yes?
Yeah, but the same fucking painting. Like, they're slightly modified, but it's basically the exact same painting.
Well, here's the point I thought you were going to make. This is not the first time that Leo has left something undone, but I guess if a bunch of powerful, rich guys in Milan go, look, son of a bitch, you gave us what we didn't want. We're not happy. We can make it so it's very hard for you to get work in this town again. I mean, I don't know, but for whatever reason, out of all of his unfinished paintings, this is the one where these guys are like, no, you're going to come back, son, and you're going to do it again. Get some help, whatever, but you're going to do this for us. So to me, something was different about that, but I don't know.
And we only have three paintings from his 20 years in Milan. There are only three paintings that have survived. Two are frescoes painted on walls. One is a little thing called the Last Supper. You may have heard of it. Not a bad painting.
Yeah,
but we only have one painting on. Well, you know, it wasn't originally even on canvas, but this is the only painting on canvas, the first one that he did, the 1485 one,
right.
from 20 years in Milan. It's the only thing we got to show for it. When he was, you know, all the time in the world, could have painted. No, he had to study the wing movements of dragonflies instead of painting stuff.
Right.
So he paints the replacement version 25 years later, and that's completed around 1508. That one is now in the National Gallery of London.
Mm. Okay. So everybody's got one but us.
These are known as the Louvre version of the rocks and the London version of the rocks.
Right.
Both were originally painted on wooden panels, but the Louvre version was transferred to canvas in 1806. And it was damaged in the process.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know how you transfer something off a wooden panel onto a canvas.
Get Alex on the phone. I'd like to call. I'd like to use one of my calls. Let's ask her.
Call a friend.
Call a friend.
And if it was 1806, this is when Napoleon's emperor, so I'm assuming Napoleon had something to do with it, knew about it. I haven't had a chance to dig into the story behind that. But
probably did, though.
Tragic, though.
Yes.
But I still don't know how you transfer something off of wood and onto canvas.
I think
it's bizarre.
You lick the painting, stick it really hard on the wood, and here's the important part. You have to push really hard for like 15 seconds. Don't let go. And then voila.
And wouldn't it be backwards then?
Okay. You lick the
then
back
you have
of
to
the painting.
It again. Right. Then you have to lick it again and stick it on another one to get it around the right way. You have to do it twice.
Right. Well, I always find lick twice, measure once. I don't know. I was going somewhere with it. Lick twice. Look up once. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's just stick with the lick twice. That's good.
Coffee mug. Where were we?
The London version was painted for the Chapel of the Confraternity of the Immaculate Conception, as I said, which is in the Church of the San Francesco Maggiore in Milan. Now, sold by the church very likely in 1781 or 1785, where it was bought by a guy called Gavin Hamilton, who's a Scottish painter who lived in Rome for decades, was an artist and an art collector.
Nice.
He took it to England. And I read up on this guy. Fascinating guy, this Gavin Hamilton.
Tell me.
He's just this guy who's living in Rome and is an expert on Renaissance art in the 1780s.
Gotcha.
And he's able to just what's that? Da Vinci? Sure.
I'll take it.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. No worries. Yeah.
Put it in the back. Yeah. Where were we?
So let's talk about these paintings and the differences between them. So in both of them, as I said, one's a copy of the other. We see Mary and her posse sitting in a barren grotto.
Right. Like Hugh Hefner's.
Representing her.
Right.
Representing her barren lady parts.
I
find this fascinating. Normally when we see paintings of Mary and Jesus, over the course of this show, when we've seen paintings of Mary and Jesus, they're usually in fabulous palazzos. They're in very nice rooms.
Yeah.
There might be a window with some nature in the background, but they're normally sitting in a villa, a palazzo.
Something sweet.
They're super, super a member of the elite.
Right.
But here he puts them not only in nature, but in harsh nature.
Right.
A rocky grotto. A little cave,
right?
With this barren, alien-looking landscape behind them, and none of the books that I read really delved enough into his thinking about this. Didn't really get into it. Normally, she's sitting on a throne. She's the Queen of Heaven.
She's got a halo,
or maybe in an
or
in a nativity scene. She might be in a barn or something like that, sitting on bales of hay.
That's
with
acceptable.
People worshiping her and animals and that kind of stuff.
Right. Right.
But here she's seated on the ground. Now, I did read that this is referred to as the Madonna of Humility. It's a representation of Mary.
Oh.
She's not the queen here. She's just sitting on the ground. But she's surrounded by this very harsh landscape. Now, if we know any, we know Leonardo's trying to communicate stuff here.
Yes.
He's trying to tell us something here about what's going on. Do you have any theories, Ray?
I was reading that like what was it? That the Renaissance mentality was, we were saying earlier in episodes, was focused on life here on Earth. And so instead of having Mary on a throne, he was just going to put her in a natural setting. But at the same time, there was going to be some darkness. I'm trying to remember, there was some kind of description about the landscape behind her that she was that she was sitting on was somehow supposed to be the womb. I'm trying to remember. Let me. I'm probably going to cut this out.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Her barren womb, as I said before.
It's
just rocky. Yeah. You don't want to. Well, it's like, you know, you don't want to go in there. It's just, there's just rocks and
just rocks,
you
know, and hard
little animals that bite you and inside of her womb, it's horrible.
Right.
Well, she pushed out another seven kids after this, so or before and after this, apparently, according to Christian tradition.
If it wasn't a dark cave after Jesus was born, it was certainly a dark cave after all of the kids was born, unless God tightened things up for her, if you know what I'm saying. But I don't think we should talk about this.
That's the least he can do.
You would think. You would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
a little bit of a nip and tuck.
Joseph would go like, "Hey God, you know what? I'm just saying, please don't strike me down. But I think you owe me. I think you owe me one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm, you were there first. My fucking wife. At least you could do is keep it toit. You know what I'm saying?
Toit, like a toy gun. Now, if you go back to. Remember that painting, Verrocchio's Baptism of Jesus, where Leonardo painted the Jesus figure and he was manscaped?
Yeah.
he's standing there.
Sorry.
We talked about this very early on in our Leonardo series. It's the first major painting that we have that Leonardo was involved in.
Right.
And it's set in a rocky landscape as well, but... it's a baptism. It's John the Baptist baptizing Jesus.
That's acceptable.
You know, it's supposed to be in a river, you know, by the rivers of Babylon. It's got nothing to do with Jerusalem, but still. so this, though, is a very different scenario. And I really do find it really fascinating where he has set this and how they're just sitting on the ground. You know, so to describe it, I guess we've got, well, I'll get into the detail in a minute. Actually, I'll go through it. But the first thing that we have to point out is the absence of halos.
Yes.
In this first version.
Right.
Nobody has a halo. Now, you know, we've seen lots of Madonna and Baby Jesus paintings during the course of our Renaissance series.
Yeah.
How many of them didn't have halos? Can you recall?
None, I thought, because they were divine. So you have to have a halo to signify their divinity. Is that right?
Well, I could think of one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, pre Leonardo, I'm pretty sure they all had halos,
right?
But then we did come across one, Madonna and Child with a Vase of Flowers, 1475. So about 10 years before he finishes this one.
Wow.
They didn't have halos either.
Right.
But I think this is the first time with Leonardo's work that Italian Renaissance artists – and an Italian Renaissance artist has completely abandoned halos. They had varied a lot. Filippo Lippi – guy who ran off with a young nun, knocked up and ran off with a young nun.
Yes.
He reduced the halo down to a very narrow ring
around
Mary's head. He tried to get rid of it altogether but couldn't quite get rid of it.
Right.
And I did read some stuff that said that the symbolic nature, the supernatural nature of a halo was sort of antithetical to the realism of the Renaissance.
Exactly.
We're trying to picture real humans doing, you know, realistic looking things.
Right.
The halo, they don't like that. Right. We're not big fans.
Not
of the
too
halo.
Showy.
I mean, they had them up until this point.
Right.
But they were trying to get rid of them as much as possible.
Yeah.
Hide them as much as possible, or shrink them, reduce them.
Exactly. One art historian article online said something like to the effect of Leo got rid of the halo because, like you said, it was unrealistic in the sense of, you know, the people of the Renaissance are like, well, let's make it as realistic as possible, but that Leonardo would show their divinity through their grace and beauty. And I think everybody's trying to make Mary either look at the very least pleasant and the baby Jesus nice, but I truly do think Leo is one of the ones who does make them absolutely amazing looking. And so for his mentality, he's probably thinking, I don't need the I don't need the halo because I'm showing them in a certain way. But I wonder if that pissed off the people who are paying for this, or like you were saying earlier, I wonder if the rich people were pissed off that he did have them in a natural setting and not on a throne or not in a courtroom or not in a kingdom or whatever. But I wonder if those were some of the things that pissed these people off. Sadly, I guess we'll never know, but they certainly were not happy with the first painting.
Yeah. And I did read that argument about, you know, using ideal beauty and grace to replace the halos to show divinity, but he painted everyone with grace and beauty.
Because that's how he did.
Not just...
Yeah, that's how he wrote.
Yeah, that's how he does, right? Yeah. And so were others like Botticelli and Lippi.
Right.
They'd all been, you know, striving for ideal beauty and grace. Like, you know, all of Botticelli's stuff of Venus, you know, all these sorts of things, they're gloriously beautiful, but not, well, I guess kind of divine. Aphrodite coming out of the shell, sort of divine. But getting back to Halo, so
yes.
Leonardo doesn't have halos in this. In that one I mentioned before from 1475, there were no halos. But in his Madonna and Child with a Flower, the Benoit Madonna, completed 1478 to 1480, so about in between these two, they had very prominent halos.
Huh.
So it might be this thing about, you got to before, about like the artist as just a, you know, a worker fulfilling a commission.
Yes.
And
yes.
Versus him going, you know what? Fuck all this bullshit. I'm not painting the halos. I don't care what you want because that's just bullshit. And I've got standards. You know?
Right.
I'm Leonardo da Vinci. I don't do halos.
Exactly. Anymore. You think somebody would just be, I just want to pay Leo to come in, do something to one of the walls of my house. I don't care what you do because you've done amazing things before, but clearly for whatever reason, and you read out the description, this Leo was given very detailed instructions about how to convey this. And I'm sure that rubbed him the wrong way.
Look, to be frank, they should just be happy that they get something finished.
Yeah,
that I'm even talking to you. Just be happy that he finishes something.
Yeah.
And why did he finish this one? Like, that's the big question. It's the only painting, not on a wall,
right,
that we have from Milan, and as far as I'm aware, the only one that he did from his time in Milan. I don't think Vasari mentions anything else. So why? Why did he accept it? Why did he finish it when he has not finished so many other things, do you think? Particularly when the money wasn't good in the first place. Right. Like they weren't happy with the money.
Now, just to be clear, you are talking about the first painting, yes?
The first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it was that's a good one. I think it was done because he had finished the painting, but there were still issues with the money, like you were just saying a second ago. So I really don't know, but it's kind of weird that out of all of his works, and this one truly had arguments going back and forth about commission and about final payments. And there's even going to be more arguments about payments when it comes to the second painting. But I really don't, I guess maybe this is going to sound crazy, but did everything finally fall in place on one occasion for Leo to actually finish a painting, even though he's probably bitching about getting paid more? I don't know. I really don't understand how this one was actually completed unless they harassed him nonstop. I could see that. I could see these rich guys harassing him. Yeah.
Well, my theory is it was the brothers.
Oh.
He was collaborating with these other guys.
So he had to do all the work.
And they.
Yeah.
Well, they were like, hey, motherfucker. We need this job. We need to get this done. Yeah. We need to get paid. You can't slack off on this one. Snap, snap, get it done. You know, I think that was the secret to getting Leonardo to finish something.
Right.
He had to it had to be done, given to him in collaboration with a business partner.
Right.
Who, you know, he didn't want to let them down. You know, he's happy to let the rich guys down.
Oh, yeah, all day long.
Fellow artists.
But But not only that, but and you grazed this, but I don't think you said it specifically because we're not sure. But before he was in the Corte Vecchia, he might have been staying in Ambrogio's Paredes's studio. And so, can you really afford to piss off the people if you're staying in their house? If you're eating food with them every night, if you're sharing the bills or splitting commissions or whatever, maybe it was just simple social pressure or something like that as to why he finished this painting.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, we know he was a reputation for being a good friend and mm-hmm. a nice guy, good collaborator, liked collaborating right. with others on things. So I think he just felt a responsibility that, okay, well, these guys, they have a reputation. I don't want to ruin their reputation. Happy to ruin my own, but I don't want to ruin theirs.
So he's 98% done. He goes, you know what, guys, this is normally when I bail. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang around. I like you guys. I like the cut of your jib. Let's finish this painting. And they're like, oh, God, you're such a fucking asshole, Leo. And they finished the painting, so it worked out.
Now, look, getting back to the painting, yes. we can see that Leonardo has grouped the figures together within the geometric shape of a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Not a triangle, but a pyramid, because pyramid is cooler
is
than
it?
A triangle. It's three-dimensional. Yeah, come on. The fucking ancient Egyptians didn't build giant triangles in the desert.
You're right.
They did. They started with that.
Right.
Well, they did. They started with that, and then they were like, you know what's cooler than a big triangle in the pyramid?
A three-dimensional triangle. That's
what we
need.
Way cooler.
Yeah.
Now, he also has the figures gesturing and looking at each other, and according to the smarty pants art historians, this is to unify the composition.
Right.
If they're pointing, your eyes are going from, oh, what's he looking at? He's looking at him. Okay, what's she looking at? She's looking, oh, okay, I see. So it brings your eyes in, focuses them on the figures. You want to see what they're looking at.
Right.
And this is important, apparently, because paintings from the early Renaissance often have figures looking in different directions,
mm-hmm.
separate from one another. Leonardo's making them look at each other, pulling them together. Like if you look at the Botticellis that we've talked about in the past.
Right.
Springtime for Hitler and Aphrodite coming out of the clamshell. The characters aren't engaging with each other typically. They're all sort of individually looking in different directions or looking at you, the viewer, and that kind of stuff. Leonardo has them all working together. It's like a basically a foursome where they're all pleasuring each other except the angel in this first one, which we'll talk about.
It's a theme.
Neither version, though, neither the first version or the second version really have anything to do with the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
Like,
it's kind of weird.
There's nothing about Mary's conception or the fact that she's free of original sin.
Right.
I don't see any. She's not covered in immaculate either, but she's.
Give me a minute.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now, Mary is the central figure, obviously, in both of these paintings, though. She's the largest. She's in the center of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
But John, baby John the Baptist, like the story is supposed to be that he's Jesus' cousin.
Right.
Again, this was something that was invented, hundreds of years later by Christians who are like, oh, what if – what if John the Baptist was his cousin? That'd be cool, right?
Tighten it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, as opposed to Jesus, who we don't really have much in the way of historical evidence mm-hmm. about him existing at all, we do think that John the Baptist was a real guy.
Oh.
He gets mentioned by Josephus, I think, in a text, a section that scholars think is legitimate. Mm-hmm. So he was a real historical Judean crazy preacher guy.
Right.
My suspicion is that the early Christians kind of took him and threw Jesus into the story just to give – it's like taking Bill and Ted and throwing them in with Napoleon and stuff. You go, okay, well, Napoleon really existed, therefore Bill and Ted probably really existed as well because they interacted with
a cover-up
Napoleon.
Of sorts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, of sorts.
Okay. I gotcha.
Mary is in the center, but John is sort of kneeling. He's doing a Colin Kaepernick here. He's down on one knee, taking a knee.
Protesting the white man, the pig, the cop. No, I think it's a different story. Sorry. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
In the Louvre version, the original version, the oldest version, there's an angel sitting next to baby Jesus, and is looking at the viewer, looking, breaking the fourth wall, looking at us, smiling,
pulling a Deadpool,
and pointing,
pointing.
I think it's moonlighting. Do you ever watch Moonlighting?
The TV series,
Sybil Shepherd, Bruce Willis,
Sybil
Shepherd. They used to break the fourth wall all the time. That's the first show I remember breaking the fourth wall. They just turned a camera, both of them, in the middle of a scene and go, really? are we really doing this? Okay. All right.
back to it. It worked there, doesn't work here.
Well, maybe not for the confraternity who commissioned it, that's for sure.
Yes. I'm sure they weren't happy.
So the angel's looking at us. By the way, the other thing with the painting is it's very dark. There's not a lot of color in it. It's very dim, very just rocky colored. The angel has this very bright red cloak on, though. The only other hint of color in the whole thing is Mary's got like a turquoise coat on and a golden thing underneath it, like a muted gold.
On the inside.
But the rest of it is really just...
some form of brown.
Brown.
Yeah.
Brown
shade. Maybe some gray thrown in for good measure.
Dirty green.
Yes.
It's camo. So it's really striking. This ability that he's developing to really create shadow and light and, depict this depth as well, because you can sort of see into the background through the grotto. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah.
John the Baptist, just to remind everyone too, was the patron saint of Florence. Remember they had lots of statues and stuff to John the Baptist, and that might have pissed off his clients as well. His clients are Milanese.
Yeah.
And he's making this all about the John the Baptist, the patron saint of his hometown.
He's getting further and further away from the commission. I'm sorry. I'm just saying they couldn't have been
happy.
I'm
going back to the commission. Yeah. There's no John the Baptist in the commission, right? No. They said Mary, Jesus, and the two angels and two prophets.
Done.
And he was like, nah.
I could do that.
Don't feel it.
Or.
Oh, fuck, I could do it. Yeah, I could do it.
I could do anything.
Do anything.
But I'm not.
Leonardo da fucking Vinci. Right. Yeah, Meldy FV. Da fuck. Yeah. Leonardo da fuck da Vinci. What the fuck? Don't tell me what to do. That's right. The fuck?
Go away, peasant.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, so they might have thought that was a bit, I don't know, a bit sneaky throwing in the old Florence thing. Although, I don't know why he would have any love for Florence. I mean, his career was a disaster until he got to Milan. He got no love out of Florence as an artist. Now, baby Jesus is sitting with the angel. Now, who's the angel, Ray?
It's a human being that I'm pretty sure I want to have sex with, but I don't know if it's a male or female. Is that too honest?
Does it matter, really?
No. Is there a hole somewhere? An angelic hole?
Holes is holes.
Yeah, a hole's a hole. No, yeah. I don't know who red cloak person is.
Well, this is supposedly the Archangel Uriel.
Right.
Who is taking the baby John to Egypt because he heard a rumor that King Herod supposedly was going to kill all of the baby males. Aww. Massacre of the Innocents. Again, never happened. But this whole thing about angels having names is interesting.
Right.
In the older books of the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh, angels don't have names. They only start to get names after the Jews returned from exile in Babylon, thanks to the original Messiah, Cyrus the Great, founder of the Achaemenid Empire, first Persian Empire in the 500s BCE, as you'll remember. I think we did that in our Alexander series. We may have done it in this too. I can't remember. But we talked about in Alexander how the Jews called him the Messiah because he let them return home from Babylon to Jerusalem.
Right.
So it seems to be that there was a lot of changes to Judaism. Again, we talked about this in the show somewhere.
Right.
When they came back from Babylon, they sort of adopted a fair amount of stuff from the worship of Mithra in Babylon, and they sort of, you know, merged it. Christianity had a lot of Mithraism as well. Judaism had some Mithraism as well. But that's when angels started to get names because, you know, there were lots of sort of angelic things. By the way, as I'm not sure if we've talked about this, but the whole thing of the whole story of the three kings,
right,
is a Persian story from Mithraism in the first place as well.
Are you serious?
Christians picked that up. Well, yeah,
I'll have that.
It's not in the Bible.
Thank you. I'll take that.
Yeah, Christians adopted that, and there's a great book. One of the guys in my film wrote a book. We don't talk about it in the film, but he wrote a whole book on this, going back through the piecing together how it ended up in Christianity, and it comes from the Persian Empire.
Oh, cool.
But only two angels have names in the canonized Jewish scriptures.
Right.
They're the archangels Michael and Gabriel.
Mm.
I think they're both in the book of Daniel, which is one of the last books of the Tanakh to be written. Very late idea to give angels names.
But it made the cut.
Then,
yeah.
Then Raphael, the angel Raphael, not the artist, Julia the Vatican guide's Renaissance husband, as she called it.
Yeah.
The angel Raphael is in the book of Tobias or the book of Tobit. But which is not really canonical. It's deutero-canonical, sort of 3rd or early 2nd century BCE Jewish work, part of the intertestamental literature, as I think it's called.
That got
goes
deep.
Between the stuff that was written between the Old Testament and the New Testament, intertestamental.
Cool.
Not to be confused with my balls after I got the snip, which is there's a lot of intertestamental pain going on there for a good month. Stop touching your microphone.
Sorry.
Where was I going with this? Now, Uriel. Yes. So Uriel is the fourth angel to get a name.
Oh.
Usually listed in the Christian Gnostic literature under the name Phanuel. Somehow got changed to Uriel. Maybe there's two different, maybe they're the same. There's a lot of confusion around here. Uriel means God is my light. Phanuel means turn to God. Anyway, the early Christians we know really loved angels.
Yes.
Because it seems that they replaced the many, many pagan gods that they used to worship.
Oh.
So, you know, you got, you know, yes, we only have one God. Who was three.
Right, sure.
And Mary. But that's not enough.
No.
We need more.
Got a whole,
you know, you need an angel for everything.
Slew of angels right here. Yeah, take your pick. Yeah. Take your pick.
You know, it's, not many people know that the original version of Ice Cube's song 99 Problems was 99 Angels.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, the version that we're all familiar with. Now, this, for people are going, hold on, that's a Jay-Z song. No, no, no. Jay-Z took an Ice Cube song and did his own sort of version of it.
Made millions.
Ice Cube song, I got a hole from the east, got a hole from the west, got a hole that likes to jack it off and rub it in a chest, got a hole from the north, got a hole from the south, got a hole that likes to suck it long and hold it in a mouth, got a bitch with hair, a bitch with none, a bitch with a knife, a bitch with a gun, a bitch with an ass big as a TV set. There's a bitch over here and then one I'm going to get. But maybe not. She might not like me, though. No sweat to a Vela Slammer sister, though. Ice in the whole damn herd. I fuck them all and leave them on the curve. I got a bitch with a mink who rocks a fat gold link, who likes to fuck me with the ass up on the kitchen sink. I got a bitch with tits, a bitch with ass, a bitch with none, but I give her a pass. And I love them all. I love them crazily, and they love me back. That's why they stay with me. So if you have a girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. Hit it. So the original version of that was, I got an angel from the east, I got an angel from the west, I got an angel who likes to jack it off and rub it in his chest, I got an angel from the north, I got an angel from the south.
I can't.
That's what the Christians, right? They had lots of angels,
yeah,
basically.
I'll have one of those, please. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. You got to have an angel for everything, because there's a lot of things that got to get done. You know, we don't have time to wait for an angel to finish job one and get to job two.
Oh, my God. Things have changed.
But the angels thing was actually a legit problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people – so basically, you know, people worshipped the Greco-Roman gods. As we know, there was a pantheon of gods. And, you know, part of the conversion process was like, okay, well, look, you don't have to give them up.
Right.
You just – well, that's this guy. The same way the Romans took the Greek gods, yeah, and said, well, they got a different name.
Stick
now.
Stick some wings
the
on.
The Christians took them and just gave them – yeah, took gave them a different name.
Halo.
You can keep worshipping him.
Right.
In the Council of Rome in the year 745, Pope St. Zachary told everyone to cut it out, the angel worship. Angelolatry is what it's called as. He was going, get out, come on, cut it. Joke's a joke, but this has gone far enough. Like, seriously.
I mean,
stop worshipping angels. This is getting out of hand.
Yeah. It's been 700 years, so you cut that show. Can I ask, do you know, because I don't, if I was a Bible-thumping Christian, would my church be telling me that the angels were always here? Were they always part and parcel with heaven and God and Jesus and the Holy Ghost? Is an angel just a part of the plethora that is heaven up there, or do they come late? I don't know anything about the origin of angels besides vampires. Do you know anything?
Yeah, no, I think different denominations have different, slightly different,
that makes sense,
takes on this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think generally speaking, Christian mythology thinks that the angels were created by God very early on, pre-humans.
Gotcha.
Because he was lonely. You know, he needed someone to hang out with. They do jobs for him. Right. They do his tasks. They get stuff done.
Do you know,
why
God made humans? Like, have you ever hung with an angel before? Pretty fucking boring. You know what I'm saying? They flap their wings. Yeah. They have flying contests. After about 5 minutes, you've seen it all. Mm. So let me invent some humans in my
image. Genitalia. No genitalia.
Ken?
According to
Barbie with wings? Is that you? I'm going to make some humans.
Alan Rickman in Dogma, right? Gave this whole speech about not having any genitalia.
I miss that man. Anyway.
R.I.P. Alan Rickman. Yeah. What a legend.
Oh, I saw. Who's the actor you keep going on about? Mike Ironside.
Michael Ironside.
I've seen 90% of Nobody, and he's in that. Michael Ironside's in that. He's the owner of the company that the main character buys out. Anyway, so it was just good to see Michael.
No.
Yeah.
What? You dropped out when you said you've watched 90% of what?
90% of the movie Nobody with
With Saul Goodman.
Yes.
Michael Ironside. When he came on the screen in the cinema, I leapt out a big rookie group and my wife and sons were like, oh, shut the fuck up. What is wrong with you? I'm like, it's my girl.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's getting old, bald,
he's
old, girthy.
But
he's still Michael Ironside.
You haven't seen the finale, like the big shootout in the warehouse?
I got like 15, 20 minutes or something like that left. That's for tonight.
Oh, yeah. So good. And he goes all Michael Ironside badass there too.
Yes.
He's the greatest. Yes. Yeah. Just so great. That film was great on many levels, but just to see Michael Ironside get a role like that again at this late stage of his career was fantastic.
After I watched the first half of it, the next day I was kind of yelling like, where's the goddamn kitty cat bracelet? And my wife just, get the fuck out of here.
Well, seeing as we're now talking about TV and movies and shit, are you watching Succession?
Succession. No, I've only seen like the first just two shows or something. I need to get on it.
The season three just finished this week, and it was the fucking greatest hour of television I've ever seen. It was so fucking great.
Right.
And the Beatles documentary. Chrissy and I finished watching the Beatles documentary earlier this week, and we just haven't stopped talking about it. The Beatles documentary, Tony and I have been talking about it for hours on our QAV show. It's a spiritual experience, the Beatles documentary, man. It's like the greatest thing ever made, ever. Like 8 hours of watching the Beatles write some songs for an album and then go up on the roof and perform them live. And you see way more of the rooftop concert than has ever been seen before.
I love that.
Include when the police come up to try and shut them down
because
they're getting complaints of noise. And Paul sees them. He turns around and sees the cops and he just smiles. And then he's singing Get Back and he's like, Get Back. Your mama's waiting for you. She's going to send the police up to try and shut you down. Get back, baby. Get back, Loretta. And Mal Evans, their roadie, comes up because he's sort of taking the brunt of it from the cops who are threatening to arrest everyone.
Right.
Mal Evans goes up and turns off George's amp.
George
looks at him. Mal points at the cops and George is like, fuck you. George goes and turns his amp back on again and keeps playing. And this is the last time the Beatles ever played together.
Yes.
The last time they ever played in public.
Yes.
And there were police there trying to shut them down.
Fuck you, police.
You know.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the greatest fucking way for the Beatles to go out. You could,
yeah.
And then the last thing John says as they finally walking away is like, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the band and myself, and I hope we pass the audition. Like, just the greatest fucking mic drop
line. Yeah, smooth as hell.
Like, he didn't know that was going to be their last ever time they played together or their last ever public performance, but he was just joking around all the time. Anyway, fucking great. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, where were we?
So, back to the painting.
Yes.
So, in the original version, baby Jesus is blessing baby John with two fingers.
You're damn right.
But he's actually holding up three fingers.
Right.
The index, the middle, and the thumb.
Right.
And apparently this comes from Roman art.
Oh.
It's a symbol that they would have, if you had somebody in the forum that was speaking, it basically means, I'm talking here.
Right, you hold the three fingers, I'm talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a benediction. Like Christians tend to think of it as a benediction or a blessing. I'm talking now. I don't know. Baby Jesus's mouth isn't open either, so I don't know what he's talking about, but he doesn't know. But that's what that means. So if you see that, it means I'm talking. Christians took it on and said it was a sign of the benediction. They also say it's supposed to be a reference to the Holy Trinity.
Right. Father, Son, that's what I heard.
The Holy Ghost, right? One God, three gods, one God in three God.
Yeah.
One, three. Three gods. And Mary.
Circle jerk.
But Fiona.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most stupid idea in human history is what I call the Holy Trinity.
Right.
Like no one, 2,000 years, no one's been able to explain it. It just is. You ever get into a conversation with a Christian theologian, you go, well, how is it three and one? They go, look, it just is.
It just is.
You go, well, that's stupid.
That's lazy. Like,
no. It just is. How does it work? We don't know. It just is.
Yeah.
It's magic. We just said it does.
Yeah.
So shut up.
Shut up.
Now, in both paintings, Mary is using the force to try and push baby Jesus away from her.
Yes.
Or to maybe she's trying to generate like Emperor Palpatine lightning.
I think the
lightning was removed.
Sith lightning.
Yeah. She's trying to generate Sith lightning.
It's going to come out the wrong end.
And I'm not going to say that I spend a good 10 minutes every day of my life trying to do that, trying to figure out which part of my brain to squeeze to make it come out. There's no truth to that rumor.
I tried to boil water for coffee in the morning, and I'm like, and then I have to.
One of these days I'm going to get it. One of these days I'm going to work it out.
Not today.
The flowers in the painting – supposedly, in the first version, both symbolic and realistic.
Yeah.
They are the species that would be found in a moist grotto at that time of the year.
Yeah. Well, not
moist being my favorite word.
Not only were they the right accurate type of flowers, but they were also in the right type of dirt, because you have hard rock and you've got, I think, sandstone or whatever. So he's got the correct flowers at the correct time of the year in the correct location. And that's what Leonardo is. You know, you're not surprised by that at all. We've been going on banging on this guy for about a year now, but all of his observations at art and nature have come through to his art as well. And so it is, if Mary and John and the baby and the angel were really there, it could have looked something like that, because it's that realistic. And you know, he's not going to waste time. He's not going to waste all the valuable knowledge that he has about nature and not put it into the painting. That's exactly what he does. Now, did he get in trouble for that? We don't know, but it is a realistic representation of what it would look like if this was true.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go into the symbolism, but right. There is symbolism of all the plants that are in there. But there are normally certain flowers associated with Jesus. Like, we've talked about the red carnation mm-hmm. before, and we've talked about the pomegranate, and there's the white rose that was supposed to symbolize the purity of Christ. These were traditional elements of a painting of Jesus and Mary, and Leonardo's like, well, fuck no, they're not realistic. They wouldn't be in a grotto.
Right.
So I'm not putting that in there.
Exactly.
Another thing that's realistic are the rocks. Apparently, according to modern geologists, the rocks are perfect.
Yes.
Perfect depictions of the kind of rocks, kind of geological formations that you would have seen in wherever this is supposed to take place, at that, you know, in a little rocky grotto like that.
Right.
There is this weathered sandstone, as you said. There's facets of the harder rock that glisten in the sun. Mm-hmm. There's in igneous rock formed by the cooling of molten lava.
Wow.
There's vertical cracks in that caused by cooling. And, you know, they're painted perfectly. There's a seam of between the sandstone and the igneous rock running just above Mary's head, which is perfectly depicted.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just – he just understands it. All the study that he's done of nature, all is showing up in this. And to us, looking at it 500 years later – it means nothing. No. We don't pay any attention to the background, right? We're looking at the figures. And I'm sure people at the time were probably much the same. They didn't know. They weren't paying attention, but he knew.
Right.
He knew is the point. Anyone could have done anything. He could have painted, you know, a background made of green jello. No one would have paid any attention.
Exactly.
But this is important only to Leonardo. He's probably the only person who gave a shit about the accuracy of all of this stuff, but he did it.
Yeah, him and art historians. They're very excited to talk about the background, but you're right, for everybody else who couldn't read, you know, the picture was another educational moment for you to, you know, imagine the scene of Mary and baby and John meeting. So, yeah, but everybody else wouldn't have given a crap, but that's just not who he is. And it would be interesting if a different artist had come in and painted this panel. The people would have been cool. There would have been color. There would have been all the stuff. But the background, like you were hinting at, the background would have just been made up, imaginary, not accurate to the time of the year, not accurate to the location, not accurate anything. It just would have been some background. But that's not who he is. But I imagine the rich people that paid him didn't really give a shit about the background. They're more upset about what's going on with the four people involved. But again, that's who he is. He does things like this.
Now, apparently with paintings like this, he ushered in a new era of art with the whole juxtaposition of the light and shade that created a sort of a sense of flow. It's called tonal painting. Mm. Martin Kemp, the world's greatest living Leonardo da Vinci expert, apart from you and I, of course.
Right, sure.
He's the third greatest. talking about tonal painting, said, that is to say the colors operate within an overarching system of light and shade in which they are all subject to the same process of darkening in the shadows, finally losing almost all of their independent color.
Ooh, I like that. the blurriness.
Well, that's exactly how I would have put it too.
Yeah. That's how I would have painted it.
Just ripping off.
That's how I would have described it.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you look closely at it, I said before there's lots of grays and darks and browns, but when you look at Mary's turquoise cloak, you see where the light's hitting it, you see the turquoise, but then it fades into darkness.
Right.
The same way the rocks do, the same way the plants do.
Yeah.
It's just this consistent tonality all the way across. It looks it's impeccable. There's a lot of shade. And I think that's why he's setting it in a grotto too, by the way. He's going, hey, motherfuckers, look what I can do.
What?
You know?
I can shade the fuck out of this thing. Now watch me.
Yeah.
What is it? Sfumato? Whatever. There's going to be blurred lines. There's going to be angles. There's going to be light. I'm going to rock your world. Watch this, guys. And he did.
We've talked about before that in Florence at the time, the artists had been painting with tempura made of egg whites. And he was using oils, which, you know, was something that was very popular in Holland. We've talked about that in the four, but he's spent his time in Milan, not just looking at dragonflies, but perfecting his use of oils, figuring out how to apply thin layers over thin layers, gradually building it up, shading, blurring of outlines, sfumato and chiaroscuro, painting light dark. You know, it enabled him to do things that other people couldn't do. He could produce luminous tones. He could literally show how light was bouncing off of these people's skin back towards the viewer, because that's literally what was happening. He was replicating that process in the painting by having, different levels of color on the one patch of paint.
Yeah.
Most artists before him would differentiate brightly lit areas from darker areas just by adding more white pigment to the color.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, that's not really how light works.
Exactly.
It's about shade and bouncing off and reflection. So he figured out how to do that with the oils as well.
Yeah. And I think it was a couple episodes ago, you were explaining about how he would do the white primer underneath, and then he would just put on layers, thin layers of paint, you know, whether it was the same color, different color. And so when the sun or when light hits it, it does look more realistic because it picks up the colors and it makes them more bright, or the light the supposed light in the painting reacts like real light would. And so that's what makes it look so amazing. But to go to all that work. And again, this is like you and I would just get up there and we would just paint something and whatever, you know, he's painting layers upon layers, knowing that they're going to work together to make it more realistic, make it more three-dimensional and make it like they're moving. So again, he is putting his love, his craft and all of his experience into this. Sadly, the people who paid for it aren't going to be that happy, but it is a beautiful thing to behold.
And I no longer work as a fine artist, but my understanding is that when you just add white pigment to a color, it just makes it lighter.
Yeah.
What Leonardo understood is that when light hits something, it makes it richer. Brings out the color. It doesn't just make it lighter. It makes the tones are more saturated. They're deeper. They're richer. He wrote, since the quality of color is revealed by means of light, when there is more light, we'll be seeing more of the true quality of the illuminated color. So where light hits something, it should be richer and deeper, not just lighter. And you see that in his paintings. When the light hits the angel's red cloak.
Oh, it's amazing.
Or Mary's golden thing that she's got going on over her lap there.
The underpart,
to hide her barren grotto between her legs. It really, it looks beautiful and rich and deep.
Yes.
So the biggest difference between the two versions of the painting is the angel in the second one isn't looking out of the canvas.
Right.
In the London version, the angel isn't pointing at John either. art historians have varying ideas for why this is. They seem to think that it makes the narrative easier to follow. Because in the original one, you're going, hold on, well, what's this about? Why is the angel pointing at John? John's taking a Colin Kaepernick and sort of praying to Jesus, and Jesus is giving him the three fingers, shut the fuck up, I'm talking here sign. Mary's doing the force thing at Jesus' head.
Right.
She's got a hand on John's shoulder. But it's like, okay, well, I don't know, man. Like, really, it's what's muddled. Going on here? Who's talking to what about whom?
Yeah.
But in the London version, the angel is looking at John but not pointing. John's taking the same pose, but the angel's not looking at us as if, see, do you get it? See? Yeah. What are the other differences between the two, Ray, that you observed?
The pointing, the looking of the angel, because like you said, well, let me ask you this first. On the first thing, does her pointing bother you? Is the angel's finger pointing at John? Forget messaging for a second. Just as far as aesthetics, as far as looking at the painting, does that finger bother you as much as it seems to bother some other people?
It's a very long finger.
It is a very long finger, yeah.
But as we know, the painting would have probably been up in the air. If you look at where the angel is looking, she's not looking straight at you and me,
right,
as looking at a flat depiction of it. She's looking down and to the right.
So if it's lifted up.
So if it's lifted up, yeah, and you're looking at it from where her eyes are, it would probably – it's a bit like Michelangelo, the statue's dimensions and other paintings we've talked about. Yeah, when they're on a computer screen or you're looking right at it like flat on a wall, kind of looks weird. But if it's up, if it was 30 feet up in the air and you were looking up at it, it would look perfect, I think.
I got you. Well, let me ask you this. So the other thing that I remember is that the flowers and the rocks aren't as accurate as they are in the first painting. Now, I wanted to ask you, and if you're going to go into this, I won't do very much, but there was one historian was like, or it was a London guy who worked at the London Museum who claimed that this painting was actually more Leo than originally thought, as opposed to other people working on it. And everything that you know about Leo so far, can you picture him doing the second painting going, oh, the rocks and the plants, oh, I don't give a shit, just put something in there, whatever looks nice, whatever looks pretty. Maybe he was frustrated with having to do it a second time. And I think the second one actually took many, many years, 15 years or something like that. Can you picture him just saying, oh, do some background and rocks and flowers and I don't give a shit, or I don't really care if it's accurate? Does that sound like the Leo that we've come to know and love?
Yeah, no, but like he was a lot older. Maybe he stopped giving a shit about the accuracy of stuff like that. Maybe he'd gotten over it. I don't think he wanted to paint this one. He was sort of forced into it.
I think you're right.
Fine. And maybe he was like, fuck it. You know, I'm going to give him a slapdash painting. Although scholars tend to think this is the superior painting of the two.
Yeah,
but yes, the plants aren't as geologically accurate as they are in the first one. Right. There's a lot of differences. I mean, one of the similar thing, of course, is Mary's still the center of attention, like she always wanted to be.
Yes,
she's like, everyone, look at me. Yeah. Please God, knock me up. I want to be famous.
Right.
Apparently, infrared studies of the painting show that Leo originally planned something completely different. There's a sketch that's completely different. Mary kneeling down with one hand on her breast because that's hot.
It is hot.
But he changed his mind and just copied the original painting at some point. He was like, fuck it. I'll just do the same
thing. I'll redo. Yeah.
Now, there's less sky and therefore less light in this one, but the sky is sort of got more color in it. But the light seems to be coming from a hole in the grotto on the left side of the painting.
Right.
So the lighting is a lot more stark, a lot more, you know, it's just hitting certain parts of their faces, really. And Mary's robes, I think, are a little brighter. The angel's got a blue cloak, not a red cloak. John is still doing a Colin Kaepernick, but now he's got a staff. But the big difference for me is the halos.
Yes.
Now they all have halos. Leonardo's going, no halo, halo, no halo, halo.
Right.
He's back to halo here. And I don't really know why. Nothing that I read gave me any hint as to why he may have put halos back into this one. Any thoughts on that?
No, well, just maybe the pressure, either, look, you want this done. I don't want to do this. I'll just give you whatever the hell you want so I can get the hell out of there. The only guess I have is pressure from whoever was making him do it a second time. I did want to unkindly point out that in the second one that's in London, baby Jesus looks like he got hit with an ugly stick all damn day long. And there's no other way to put that. Concentration camp face. Just not pretty. Just not pretty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the first one, he's got red curls. He's got a light on his face. He looks like he could be a pleasant child. This one looks like he needs to eat a little bit. I don't know.
Oh, he's got lots of plumpy baby fat there. Look at the legs and
just gross body.
But yeah, the face.
Not pleasant. Not pleasant.
And he's a ranger. I don't know if he's a redhead. He's a ginger. I don't know if you noticed that, but changes everything.
I'm not going to be saved by no goddamn ginger. The hell? No, just joking.
Sorry. Yeah. So as you said earlier, up until fairly recently, art historians thought that this painting was done mostly by Leonardo's assistants, partly because the plants are all wrong, but this guy from National Gallery of London, Luke Sison, and some other experts have now decided, after it had a thorough cleaning and restoration in 2010, that it is in fact all done by Leonardo's own hand. And the plants, they're saying he's given up on the realism and it's more about a metaphysical way of depicting nature, which is sort of a more mature position that Leonardo took, rather than it has to look absolutely positively realistic.
So I'm going to study nature for I don't know how many decades, and then when I get older, I'm just going to chuck that knowledge to the side and paint more metaphorically. I don't know. This is only my opinion, of course, but you know.
Yeah, no, I think what it is by this stage of his career, Leonardo's is like, listen, nature's okay, right? Nature does a good job.
Right.
But you know who can do better than nature?
This guy.
Leonardo Da Vinci. Yeah. Like, I can improve on nature. I'm not limited to the natural world anymore.
I can paint a tree. And God will look down on the tree and go, you know, fuck it. I should have did that. That's actually pretty good. I mean, I only gave myself 6 days, but still I should have included. That's pretty fucking amazing. Tree.
Yeah. So that's one of their thoughts anyway. He's trying to make it even better. So the second version of the painting, like the first, got caught up in contractual issues, confraternity weren't happy with it and how long it took. The guys who commissioned it are probably dead at this stage too.
This is my son. He's going to take over for me to try to get this painting one day. Ass, now finish it.
Now, he was working on it, finishing it in 1499.
Right.
When he had to leave Milan, of course, because it got invaded by the French.
Yep.
And it wasn't until 1506, when they were still bitching. Well, by which time he was in Paris, I think. Maybe Florence or Paris, I'm not sure. We'll get to it at some point. But after he left in Milan, there was a more legal disputes over what he'd been paid and what he had committed to. He ended up coming back to put the finishing touches on the painting, and it was only then when it was finally completed, they were signed off at it, that he and Ambrogio, the non-deaf member of the De Perdis brothers, got their final payment because they were still on the hook as well.
Oh, God.
So
yeah,
that is the somewhat messy story of the two virgins on the rocks.